Welcome to episode 9 of The Short Way Home. I'm your host, Michael Chin. This podcast is released in conjunction with my new book, The Long Way Home, from Cowboy Jamboree Press. Cowboy Jamboree Press, good grit lit, home to titles like Darren Dean's I'll Still Be Here Long After You're Gone. Visit cowboyjamboreemagazine.com for more information. Thank you to Adam Van Winkle, the founder and general editor over Cowboy Jamboree, for not only his collaboration in bringing my new book into the world, but for the art for the book cover and this podcast's artwork. In this episode, I'm focused on The Shield, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Dean Ambrose versus Evolution, Triple H, Randy Orton, and Batista. This is a no holds barred elimination match from Payback 2014 that was June 1st, 2014 in Rosemont, Illinois, with a reported attendance around 13,900. So this was a rematch. The Shield had won a six-man tag match between these two sides at the Extreme Rules pay-per-view a little while before this, and it was the main event of this show, which in and of itself isn't such an unusual thing, especially in the WWE Network era, for us not to have a world title match closing the show. But interestingly, it was during Daniel Bryan's, what seemed like his most promising world title run, at least at the time, when he'd won the main event of WrestleMania 30, making Batista tap out in the process, and looked like he was on his way to, you know, being sort of the face of the company, at least in the short term. But this was when he was having all sorts of issues with accumulated injuries that ultimately made him retire for a period of years before he was able to come back. Fortunately, WWE kind of had this in its back pocket. The Shield was getting over at a really high level. Evolution was super over as a heel faction, just based on the credibility of the guys involved. Triple H, Randy Orton, Batista, between them, Michael Cole, he cites some kind of ridiculous statistic, not ridiculous as in it's false, but ridiculous as in just kind of, you know, how out there this number is. But these guys had 30-something world title reigns between them, just to show how decorated they are, how kind of established they all were as main event level guys. So between kind of, you know, the buzz around the Shield and the credibility of Evolution and what a good match they'd had at Extreme Rules, it made complete sense for this one to main event. A world title match really wasn't missed in that sort of sense. It felt like a main event match. It was interesting to watch this one. Just from the very beginning, just watching the entrances. For the Evolution side, the thing that immediately stands out is Triple H and Randy Orton come out looking pretty uniform in their black trunks, and Batista has on these bright blue trunks and arm pads. And it's a silly thing, but it kind of got a big response on social media with people referring to him as Batista. And obviously that's sort of, you know, a completely forgettable note from this match. You know, shouldn't really matter. It's really a silly thing to make any sort of note of. But on the same kind of, it actually is kind of distracting, especially when you see Triple H and Randy Orton dressed more or less in uniform, and the Shield obviously coming out in their, you know, typical uniform. It stands out. Batista's the only guy not wearing black here, and, you know, just is sort of strange. Those aren't like the trunks he always wears, and so you would expect him to wear it. It's just sort of weirdly out of place. And for Triple H, just as a guy who, you know, kind of notoriously really protects his image and thinks about aesthetics, and, you know, makes his entrances, especially for big shows like WrestleMania, always, you know, grand productions with every detail planned out, you have to wonder maybe that actually did rub him the wrong way. There were a lot of hints that there were some heat on real life between Triple H and Batista for a period of years between then and when Batista did end up coming back to WWE fold for a retirement match with Triple H. Obviously, they seem to end on good terms. All indications are Batista always thought very highly of Triple H and kind of credited him with being the one who kind of made him and, you know, built his career as a individual superstar. I just kind of wonder, just kind of curious if maybe this was something that might have rubbed Triple H the wrong way. And regardless, it still kind of stands out as historically just kind of silly little point. But the Shield, you know, they make their signature entrance. They come in through the crowd and, you know, walk down the stands, are getting, you know, a big response from all the fans. And, you know, it's interesting, you know, Roman Reigns kept the crowd entrance. He kind of kept, you know, that, the signature look of the Shield with the bulletproof vest, whereas Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins more so had to kind of recreate themselves when the group split up. And it's interesting, though, in this moment, though, because clearly all three of them are really over, and they're really over as a unit. And it was a time when WWE was clearly taking a step back to split them up into single stars. But, you know, as WWE, you know, has talked about, you know, more than once pretty publicly, sometimes you have to take a step back to take two steps forward, and recognizing that, you know, these guys were as over as they were going to be with a group, and it was time to see what they could do as singles acts. So the match has a really fun, chaotic start where everybody just kind of pairs off. So it's Batista and Roman Reigns, and it's Triple H and Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose and Randy Orton, and just kind of this wild brawl, which is, you know, pretty fun to watch. Interestingly, the Evolution guys mostly get the better of this thing, except for Reigns does seem to mostly have the advantage over Batista. And then we get to the one part of this match that doesn't really rub me the right way, that I always kind of nitpick. There's this segment of the match, a little ways in, it runs for a good 8 or 9 minutes or so, where they actually just work this thing as a straight tag match. So previously it was established there's no disqualifications, you know, no countouts. And they start off with such a hot brawl, and then suddenly this kind of settled into everybody waiting in the corner to be tagged. They even work a full heat segment and a hot tag, which just sort of doesn't make very much sense in this match, unless they were going to try to sell it as those were supposed to be the rules all along, and finish the match in that style. I could sort of see that. But they ultimately revert to just kind of the free-for-all tornado rules. So it just sort of feels like a complete non sequitur in the match to me. The only explanation I can really apply to it is just that, you know, it can get hard to follow six guys just constantly brawling. And so, you know, maybe just to make the match a little bit easier to follow for a segment in there and kind of calm the fans down before they move into the later stretches. I can sort of get that logic, but just, you know, that it's one piece, and otherwise I consider it to be a pretty great match. It doesn't quite add up. But, you know, as they go back to, you know, everybody being involved in the action, part of what's compelling about this match, what I like about it is kind of a narrative they're going for, is the story of Evolution basically taking out individual members of the Shield and kind of isolating them and outnumbering them and for short periods of time to one by one just sort of take them out, to sort of incapacitate them. You know, and it's logical from a perspective of what you would actually do in a fight like this, but also metaphorically, I think it says something about the Shield having to stand on its own, and Ambrose and Rollins and Reigns, you all having to operate independently for stretches of this match. That structure, it also sets up some really fun comeback spots. There's one where the Evolution guys are kind of posed like the Shield after they powerbomb Roman Reigns through a table, and Ambrose just kind of runs across the announce table and tackles them all, and that's a really fun spot. And later on, there's another really good one where Seth Rollins jumps off the entrance set with a crossbody block and takes out all three guys from Evolution. You know, and these are hope spots, and they're just kind of, you know, big high spots too, and I think part of what really works about them is they don't feel overly telegraphed. I'd argue the Rollins one does a little bit because he'd done a similar spot the month before, but the Ambrose one, rather, it really does feel like it's kind of out of nowhere and very chaotic and fun. And the Rollins one, I think it's an impressive enough, you know, spot in and of itself that it still works. But part of where I think this match becomes great is just in its brutality. So we see, you know, the Evolution guys really just beating down the Shield. There's this great segment where they get the vest off of Roman Reigns. And at the time, I thought that was the way they're actually going to get the vest off of Reigns altogether to kind of show off his physique a little bit more and set him up for his singles run. That wasn't actually the case. But regardless, they get the vest off of him, so he's bare-chested and, you know, bare-backed. And basically, they stretch him over the ring steps and are beating him with these kendo sticks, which is just a really, you know, tough spot. You know, looks brutal, really sells kind of the drama and that they're actually, you know, out to, you know, not just defeat this guy, but hurt him. And you could argue that the heat segment here is too long, that the Evolution is controlling the action for, you know, a bit longer stretch than they should, or that logically they should go for an elimination. But actually, I think those two stories, or those two potentially problematic pieces kind of feed each other, because the story of evolution trying to dominate this thing, and in so doing, they're prolonging the time when they can just beat up the shield guys and put these young guys in their place and teach them a lesson. It comes across as them being very arrogant and underestimating the shield, which I think very much fits their characters in that moment. And of course, that strategy ultimately backfires on them. The shield make a really hot comeback at the end. And I think part of what's so well booked about this thing is because the evolution guys never actually pinned anyone from the shield ends up executing a clean sweep. And each member of the shield gets a pin on a different evolution guy. So it's a pretty evenly distributed victory. Although I'd argue Roman Reigns is the one who's most featured. He gets a pin, and he also sets up Rollins for his pin by hitting a spear on Batista. But still, it feels really like they're setting them up as a big deal, because it's not as though, you know, Ambrose got pinned, but Rollins and Reigns both survived, or that Reigns was the sole survivor, but rather all three of them emerged from this thing looking like, you know, world beaters, like they could be potential main event guys. And to that effect, you know, there's a way in which the Shield, oddly enough, kind of mirrors Evolution, and it's very poetic that their last match as a unit for this first run was against Evolution, because it was, Evolution was a faction that was committed to, sort of designed to, and ultimately successfully did get over two new main event guys. Randy Orton and Batista were both, you know, pretty new to the roster, not well established at all when they signed on with Triple H, and at the time Ric Flair, and they got them over at the very highest level. And the Shield did a similar thing without the benefit of a veteran presence, but with the benefit of getting a really well-structured push where they mostly dominated and, you know, at least held their own against top-level acts. All three Shield guys walk out of that feeling like main event guys, and ultimately, you know, all three of them do end up world champions. The way to go, I alluded to it already, this was the final match of the original run for the Shield. Seth Rollins did split off from the group the very next night and turn heel and join Triple H and kind of launch his own authority angle. So this match is, you know, pretty historically important from that perspective, because it wasn't just kind of, you know, a chapter in the Shield story, but sort of the final one for that segment. And WWE would, kind of milk that group and reunion angles down the road, some better than others. I think when they were, you know, sort of more organically developed, or when they were less expected, that they were really good. I thought they justifiably popped the crowd and came at some good times. Towards the end, it felt pretty transparent. They were really just kind of milking this thing for every last dollar they could, especially with Dean Ambrose on his way out the door to become Jon Moxley and go on to AEW. But nonetheless, this match, I think, represents in many ways some of the best of the Shield. I think it's ultimately a toss-up whether this was their very best match, or if you can give it to some of the matches they had with the Wyatt family, especially the Wyatt Elimination Chamber earlier in 2014. But it's sort of splitting hairs at that point. I think each of those encounters is great, just kind of in different ways. Okay, so I'm going to switch gears here. I'm going to read a little bit from The Long Way Home. The piece I'm going to read from this time is called Finishers. It's a short story that I originally published in the Working Stiff anthology from Gimmick Press, and that appears in full in the book The Long Way Home as well. It's a relatively long story, so I'm only going to read the first section of it here. But yeah, we'll give it a shot. So, Finishers. The year was 1986, and the Road Warriors were the greatest tag team in professional wrestling. In the globe of 15-inch television screen, they set up for their tandem finisher, the Doomsday Device. Animal, built like a fire hydrant on steroids, lifted up onto his shoulders a dazed, puffy-haired man in a singlet, so the guy rested in an upright, seated position. Hawk, leaner than his partner but little less muscular, leapt from the top rope. Right arm extended for a second, the camera flashed to the victim's face as it switched from a slack jaw to sheer terror. Hawk connected with the clothesline, sending the poor guy ass over tea kettle in a full backward flip before he landed in a heap on the mat. At 9 years old, Sloss and I lived with one foot in the alternative universe of pro wrestling. We watched Hawk soar above the ring, and we flexed our fledgling muscles back at him after impact. Slauson reached into a bag of Cheetos and devoured a handful. He sucked the cheese dust from his fingers, leaving them glossy, glazed with sticky orange residue. I sipped from my can of Diet Mountain Dew. It never tasted as good as the original formula, but Slauson's mom had started buying only diet sodas in an effort to control her son's swelling pudge. Slauson said our teacher told his mom that their other kids were picking on him for it, pretending to lose their balance as he walked by, as if the earth shook beneath his weight. Saturday evenings, the real world was forgotten. Slauson had his eyes fixed on the screen. That's us one day, world tag team champions. I wasn't stupid. I was the kind of kid who got picked last in gym class with good reason. The kind who nobody bothered picking a fight with because what do you have to gain from punking out the littlest kid in the class? I didn't think I'd ever make it to the National Wrestling Alliance or the World Wrestling Federation. Not really. On the TV screen, Hawk wrapped up his post-match soliloquy over the mic and slapped Animal's bare chest, a symbolic passing of the baton. Ain't that right, big man? Animal began his rant. Outside, the daylight faded. I would need to run home at the end of the show to beat my curfew of the streetlights coming on. But inside, in the glow of the TV screen, the prospect of becoming a wrestling champion seemed somehow possible. Like still thinking Santa might squeeze through the chimney. Not 364 days out of the year, but just on Christmas Eve. And so I pointed a finger at the television screen as Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard moved into frame to pose a challenge, promising a shoving match, maybe a brawl to build to their upcoming match with the Road Warriors. You better watch out, Horseman. I crushed the soda can in my hand, squeezing the last bits of yellow-green bubbling syrup out over the brim onto the space between the knuckles of my thumb and forefinger. We're coming after you. Okay, and the story goes on from there. Again, it's called Finishers. Again, originally published in the Working Stiff anthology from Gimmick Press, and now in my new book, The Long Way Home. So thanks for listening. The Long Way Home is available from Cowboy Jamboree Press, distributed through Amazon. Follow me on Twitter at Mike T. Chin or visit miketchin.com for more details.